Columbia Radio News, this is Battleground 2006, live coverage of the midterm elections from the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia University in New York. I'm Carrie Ederer.
And I'm David Fusaro. This hour, as polls on the East Coast begin to close, we'll hear about the importance of get-out-the-vote campaigns.
These last-minute pushes are certainly really important for getting people to the polls, because there are a whole bunch of people who care about politics in America who have a lot of other things going on and may not make it out there.
We'll hit the campaign. Political heavyweights came out to support candidates.
We are so honored to have with us tonight, and my honor to present, President William Jefferson Clinton.
And we'll hear voter opinion about how the war in Iraq has influenced people's votes.
Well, I understand things are not going well there, but I haven't heard one thing from the Democrats how they're going to change it.
We'll continue our coverage of the 2006 midterm elections after these headlines.
I'm Lily Jamali, Columbia Radio News. Iraq's Interior Ministry is charging 57 Iraqi security officers with human rights crimes. High-ranking officers are among those charged in connection with prisoner abuse at one of Iraq's most notorious prisons. An American military spokesman says this is the first time this Iraqi government has taken criminal action against its own forces for operating torture chambers in Interior Ministry prisons. Israeli forces have left the town of Beit Hanun in the Gaza Strip. They launched an attack on the town last week in an attempt to stop Palestinian rocket fire into southern Israel. About 50 Palestinian civilians and gunmen were killed. Much of the town has been destroyed. FBI officials say they're looking into suspicious phone calls in the tight Virginia Senate race. Several Virginia voters reported receiving phone calls meant to direct them to the wrong polling place or discourage them from voting at all. Voters in a half dozen Virginia cities and counties reported receiving such calls. Polls in Indiana, meanwhile, are staying open later than usual after delays at 75 precincts. The delays took place because cards that activate the machines were programmed incorrectly. The editor of the Los Angeles Times called it quits today. Dean Baquet had publicly criticized parent company Tribune over possible job cuts at the paper. Baquet will be replaced next week by the managing editor of the Chicago Tribune. Here in New York, leaders of an Islamic civil rights group want the U.S. Justice Department to file federal charges against five Orthodox Jewish teenagers from Brooklyn. They're accused of assaulting a Pakistani man 2 weeks ago. So far, the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office has filed assault and hate crimes charges against them. Three of the five teens have been charged as adults. Their next hearing is Friday. The president of New Jersey's state senate announced an investigation of a university hospital. Officials plan to look into whether the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey paid doctors to send patients to its failing cardiac surgery program. The accusations first appeared in Newark Star-Ledger newspaper. The state senate will hold hearings to examine if the university bypassed federal laws to increase the number of patients having heart surgery. In business news, the Federal Reserve reports that consumer borrowing has fallen by the largest amount since the recession in the 1990s. A huge reduction in auto loans is believed to be partly responsible for the drop. The Dow closed at 51 points today at 12,156. The Nasdaq was up 10 points at 2,375. Lily Jamali, Columbia Radio News.
...2006 from Columbia Radio News. I'm Carrie Ederer.
And I'm David Fusaro.
Many Americans went to the polls today with the war in Iraq very much on their minds. An exit poll conducted by the television networks and the Associated Press found that 6 in 10 voters took issue with President Bush's handling of the war. Others who cast ballots said they supported the president. Our Columbia Radio News reporters on the scene from Rhode Island to Virginia spoke to voters.
I'm Michelle from Milford, Connecticut. And the biggest reason that I'm voting today, the biggest issue, rather, is the war. Well, I want to make sure I'm voting for people who are against the war, because I've been against it from the very beginning. I've never trusted what Bush had to say.
Hi, my name is Matt Youngman. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm not happy with the way things are going over there, but I think that the Republicans are committed to finding some solution, and they definitely do have some plan to gain the peace over there.
My name is Kimberly Ang, and I'm from Chelmsford, Massachusetts. I would have to say the Iraq War, just because I think that that's the issue that is the most divisive and at the same time the most important to the future of just what our country is supposed to be. So I think that's essentially, it has the most poignancy.
My name is Matt Hayden. I'm from New York, New York. I think with the Democratic leadership, there'll be an attempt to do something about getting out. There'll be a more realistic look at what's happening. Right now, all we hear is, well, we have to stay there until we get the job done. Well, they still have never defined what the hell the job is. At least with Democratic leadership, I would expect them to say, look, we're going to stay there until we can figure out how to leave.
Daniel Kane, Massapequa, New York. Well, I understand things are not going well there, but I haven't heard one thing from the Democrats how they were going to change it. So if they came up with a better plan, I wouldn't have been beyond voting Democrat, but I heard nothing from the Democrats that were going to improve the situation. So I stay with my Republican Party.
Hi, my name is Tom Stewart. I'm here in Milford, Connecticut. The primary issue for me was probably the Iraq War and the lack of honesty about the Iraq War and the course of the Iraq War. We were lied to, essentially. And I have these beautiful young kids here, and they could be 10 years older, and they could be dying over there. So that's my position on that.
Those were some of the voters we spoke with today at the polls.
I asked Tom Edsel, a correspondent for the New Republic and the National Journal, and a professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, how the Iraq War affected how Americans voted today.
It's unquestionably the biggest issue in this election. The negative feelings towards Bush are primarily rooted in the growing concerns about the war, the way it's progressing. You're seeing voters in states like Montana, Idaho, places that were solidly red in the past, turning to Democrats now in growing numbers. And a lot of that has to do with the war. It's not the scandals like Jack Abramoff. It's not, well, it is to some extent overspending by the federal government, but really the war is the driving force in this election.
Now, are there specific races that we should watch out for where the war will have more of an impact than others? I mean, I'm thinking of, Jim Webb running in Virginia, being a veteran who's anti-war, Tammy Duckworth running in Illinois for Henry Hyde's open seat. Are there specific races where the war is going to have the strongest impact?
It's hard to say where it's most strong, but what's interesting is that in districts that were clearly Republican and that in normal elections Democrats would have no chance of competing in, like Idaho, one of Idaho's congressional districts, it's really in the very red areas. And that's true also with Jim Webb. The Democrats were fairly smart this year and recruited a lot of retired and even current military people many of whom served in Iraq to run as candidates. And they are very credible if you're going to run on a campaign of criticizing the war.
How effective have the Democrats been at turning it into their issue and making it their issue? We've seen in the past the Republicans, President Bush, being able to paint it as a black and white issue, either stay the course or cut and run, and the Democrats haven't offered much of an alternative. Is that the case right now, or have the Democrats turned it into an issue that's really going to wind up gaining them some seats tonight?
Well, it's going to be a problem for the Democrats in a way because they have won or they are winning this election and will pick up seats, if not taking over whole branches of Congress, on the basis of the war. The question will become after this election, what are they going to do? And there isn't a real consensus among Democrats, but this election is going to push the whole momentum towards withdrawal or a more phased and timetable-based pullout from Iraq. So it is likely to force the Democrats into making decisions and forcing votes, especially if they control the House and they could well control the Senate.
Now, we've had some news in the last couple of days on either side of this issue. We heard just a couple of days ago the final verdict against Saddam Hussein came out. Do you think that will help the Republicans to defend themselves against the Democratic challenges against the Iraq War?
Every time something happens over there that the Republicans have tried to grasp on something, certainly the death sentence imposed on Saddam Hussein doesn't hurt them, but I'm not sure how much it really helps. What they really need is the capture of Osama bin Laden, and that would be a really – that would – be a sort of a mind-twisting event, and that has not happened.
We see Jim Baker leading the bipartisan Iraq study group. And from some leaks and some things that we've heard, people think that they may come out with recommendations that will lead the Bush administration to change their policies on Iraq. What do you think about the Iraq study group, and what do you think they're going to push for, and what do you think about the timing of them holding off until after the election?
From what people know of Jim Baker and of Lee Hamilton, the Democrat on the committee, they are likely to take some moderating position. And Jim Baker really is very close to the president's father, who is generally known to be much less enthusiastic about this war than his son was. So they are probably going to take a moderate stance and suggest some kind of pullback. The question really is, has this been orchestrated by the Bush administration, which is desperate to find some way out of this mess, or has it been imposed on the administration? That's been argued both ways. The normal tactics of this administration have been to take events that might be seen as negative, like a Baker report coming out saying the policies are not working and need to be changed, and then trying to turn it into a positive by saying, this is what we want to do, and we are going to use this report as the engine and driving our new our policies that we wanted to adopt anyway.
Tom, thanks so much for
joining
us. That was Tom Edsel, correspondent for The New Republic and the National Journal, and a professor of journalism at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism.
Democratic Congressman Ben Cardin has served 10 terms in Maryland. Now he's now vying for the state's open seat in the Senate, a seat that hasn't been held by a Republican in more than 25 years. Andrew Scher of Columbia Radio News reports.
At a rally for Maryland Democrats last Sunday night, Senate candidate Ben Cardin introduced the evening's special guest.
We are so honored to have with us tonight, and my honor to present, President William Jefferson Clinton.
Clinton campaigned with Cardin in Prince George's County, the birthplace of Cardin's Republican opponent, Michael Steele.
There couldn't be a clearer choice. It's the real deal against the vote grab.
This was Clinton's second trip to Maryland during the campaign, and it came at a crucial time for Cardin. Cardin had long been considered the race favorite, but his lead has recently shrunk. Last week, a Washington Post poll had Cardin up by 11 percentage points. This week, polling website Real Clear Politics shows Cardin is only up by 3.7. Chris Cavey is a Republican activist in the state's conservative Baltimore County. He believes the Maryland GOP finally has a candidate on the ballot who can convince voters to cross party lines.
It's not just blind partisan politics only. I really believe there's a lot of people that are out there thinking. We have tons of people registered as Democrats who've been in this headquarters calling for Michael Steele.
Steele is different than many of his Republican predecessors. An African American, Steele was elected Maryland's lieutenant governor in 2002. Blacks represent about 30% of Maryland's eligible voters, and some, including prominent politicians, have crossed party lines to support him. But Pastor Tony Lee, who attended Cardin's rally, says race isn't everything.
That just because you look like me does not mean that you're meeting my needs or have my needs at heart. And my big concern is for any candidate, you need to look at their track record. You need to look at who they're aligned with. And anybody who's that closely aligned with Bush, just on issues, Michael Steele does not line up on issues in the way we need him to, in the way our communities need him to.
Matthew Crenson is a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. He says race is not the key factor in Steele's recent increase in popularity. Instead, he attributes it to Steele's strong campaign.
He's very personable, affable, and he has, in a technical sense, the best TV ads I've ever seen in a political campaign.
Crenson says Cardin is not as savvy. He's more experienced than Steele, but is having difficulty selling that experience to voters.
Cardin has one difficulty, which is that he doesn't come across with the same electricity as Steele. He's a very studious politician. He knows a lot about issues and policies that would bore other people to tears, like pensions, for example. And those are not the kinds of things that bring voters to rise to their feet on Election Day.
Because it's so close, Crenson doesn't think the race will be decided tonight. He says it will come down to absentee ballots, which this year represent more than 175,000 of the state's nearly 3 million registered voters. Andrew Scher, Columbia Radio News.
The U.S. Senate race in New Jersey was one of the closest in the state's history. Over the past few weeks, polls have shown Democratic incumbent Bob Menendez with a small lead over Republican challenger Tom Kaine, Jr. In tight races like these, the candidate who does the most get out the vote is most likely to win. Lisa Desai of Columbia Radio News reports.
Bergen is New Jersey's wealthiest and most populous county, just across the Hudson River from New York City. The area was a Republican stronghold for 30 years, until Democrats seized the county executive office 2 years ago. Brian Haig is the leader of a local Democratic campaign group. He says during the final days of the race, campaigning efforts in the county are crucial.
It's very close, as goes Bergen, goes the rest of the state. So both candidates, Tom Kaine Jr. and Senator Menendez, have been spending a tremendous amount of time up in here.
Menendez addressed a crowd in front of the county courthouse on Sunday. He promised to pull troops out of Iraq and lower taxes.
Bergen County, are you ready to join me and help change the direction of America?
Menendez also brought out the big-name endorsers. Reverend Jesse Jackson was there, and former President Bill Clinton addressed the crowd of over 700.
You're going to be given a big chance on Tuesday. You can say yes to a new direction for America.
Menendez volunteer Richard Garcia worked the crowd, handing out flyers and free hot dogs. He said he'd risked his own health to get out the vote.
What do you mean, went to bed? We don't sleep. I went to sleep last night at 3 in the morning, and I woke up today at 8. And the day before was like 4 in the morning, and I was back here at 8 o'clock.
While Menendez relied on hard work and big names, his Republican opponent, Tom Kaine Jr., got a last-minute infusion of big money, $3.5 million from the Republican Party. On Monday, the candidate stopped at his headquarters in Mountainside, New Jersey, where 20 volunteers waved signs and waited to appear live on Fox News.
Tom Kaine!
Kaine's campaign used the money to fly in volunteers from Virginia, California, and even Hawaii. Campaign volunteer Tony Benenga says the volunteers came to New Jersey to combat low voter turnout.
This is an off-year election. It's not as a presidential election. And, of course, that's a challenge, and that's why we're working so hard, knocking on doors and making phone calls, trying to get people to get involved.
Kaine agrees. He says efforts made by volunteers will pay off.
This campaign has reached out to 500,000 people over the course of the last couple of days alone. People are very excited about changing the direction in New Jersey.
Republicans see New Jersey as their best shot to take a Democratic seat in the U.S. Senate. If they do, it will be the first time New Jersey has a Republican senator since 1972. Lisa Desai, Columbia Radio News.
Democrats and Republicans both know voter turnout is a crucial factor in midterm elections and have developed different strategies to get voters to the polls. Dana Fisher is an assistant professor of sociology at Columbia University and an expert on grassroots politics in America. I asked Fisher about the methods both parties use to get out the vote.
The model on the right is focused mostly on what's called the 72-hour plan. This strategy focuses on connecting local peoples to likely voters who are right-leaning. And so it's through these networks of locally grounded conservative groups that the Republicans work this strategy where they get out as many people as they can. The Democrats used a two-tiered approach. One tier was focusing on professional outsourced canvassers who were people who were hired by intermediary organizations to come into areas and go door-to-door. And the second tier of this was the importation of volunteers from blue states. So what you end up with is a number of young people on the street who are not working for the specific issue that they're talking about.
In your experiences, who are the young people that get involved in canvassing?
Well, in terms of canvassing on the left, the people who get involved are young people. They tend to be young people who have some interest in politics but haven't gotten very involved in politics.
So would you say that this is an ineffective model?
I would say it's very effective for raising money, that through this model they identify non-supporters and make them supporters of the Democratic Party. It does not, however, create lasting connections among Democrats and can yield lasting connections in terms of votes. In contrast, the Republicans have a core of people who are volunteers who are calling their personal lists. And then it's a reliable strategy because it's local people who know one another talking about politics versus just random people coming to your door and asking you to get out to vote.
How crucial are these last-minute get-out-the-vote pushes in terms of voter turnout?
Well, I think that they're certainly effective and important, particularly in midterm elections, where Americans tend to feel that they don't have as much effect on national politics, although certainly this year there's been a lot of attention to how this may affect the control of the Congress and the Senate. So I think that there is a lot of attention to that. These last-minute pushes are certainly really important for getting people to the polls because there are a whole bunch of people who care about politics in America who have a lot of other things going on and may not make it out there.
What are your final predictions about this year's tightest races?
The Democrats have this wonderful opportunity. Public opinion is so low right now, and there is an extremely unpopular war being raged around the world. At the same time, the Democrats continue to rely on this outsourced political model, which does not work through local connections amongst Americans. And because of that, they're not going to be able to compete as well against the Republican model, which is much more personal and is much more local and is much more effective in general.
How do you think the Get Out the Vote campaigns for the Democrats and Republicans will change in the future?
I don't think the Republican Get Out the Vote strategies are going to change very much. I think, if anything, they're just going to become more deeply embedded in local institutions that already connect like-minded Republican voters. On the left, I would say that if the Democrats don't sweep, there will be big changes in voter turnout, Get Out the Vote strategies, and other grassroots strategies on the left.
Dana Fisher, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Dana Fisher, assistant professor of sociology at Columbia University and an expert on grassroots politics.
In politics, family ties can help win elections, especially if the family name is Bush or Kennedy. In New Jersey, family ties have helped three generations of the Kane family win office. But Garden State voters say the name is a mixed blessing for Republican Senate candidate Tom Kane Jr. Teal Anderson of Columbia Radio News reports.
Tom Kane Jr.'s father served as governor and co-chair of the federal commission that investigated the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. The candidate's great-grandfather and great-great-uncle served in the U.S. Senate, in the same seat Tom Kane Jr. hopes to hold, a seat that hasn't been held by a Republican since 1972. Kane supporter Art Neely says the candidate's family is New Jersey's answer to the Kennedy clan.
And just how they've done it, the Kennedys have done great for Massachusetts, and I hope that Kane will do a nice job here in New Jersey as well.
Other voters, like Juan Jimenez, feel relying on the family name may have backfired on Kane. Jimenez says the Republican candidate spent way too much time making appearances with his father and not enough time focusing on the issues.
Shallow grasp of the policy, basically moving and running on his name. He's a namesake, a scion of a famous family, and that's where he's getting his vote.
But Tom Kane Jr. says his family has done great things for New Jersey in the past, and he's prepared to carry on its legacy.
I was taught by my grandfather and my father that it's important to be proud of your ancestors, but it's more important that they would be proud of you. And I'm proud of the record I've had in the state Senate. I'm proud of my record in the state assembly.
Although Kane has the name, he's facing Bob Menendez, the Democratic incumbent. But if recent polls, which have shown Menendez with a small but consistent lead, are any indication, the Kane name may not be enough to take the seat. Teal Anderson, Columbia Radio News.
Polls just closed in New Jersey. The big race there was between Democrat Bob Menendez and Republican Tom Kane Jr. for the U.S. Senate. Teal Anderson of Columbia Radio News is at Kane's headquarters. We go to her live. Hello, Teal.
Hi, Carrie. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? How are things going at Kane headquarters?
Well, everyone's really excited. Tom Kane Jr. and his family arrived here at headquarters around 7. They're watching the results come in from a private suite but plan to make an appearance later. I spoke to Tom Kane Sr. a few minutes ago. He's very excited for his son. When I asked him how this election felt as an outsider, he said he's more nervous for his son than when he was running for office himself. He said this election has been really hard on him because it's been such a nasty election, and that when people said things about him, it just rolled right off him, but that things are a little bit different when it involves your son.
Now, have any numbers started coming in yet?
I haven't heard that any numbers have come in yet. I know that they were the Republicans were really looking at the more suburban areas and really noting that there were high numbers in those counties.
Now, I understand there's been talk of irregularities with the electronic voting machines. How might this affect the New Jersey Senate race?
Well, the Kane campaign is very concerned about the problems with electronic voting machines. There's possible allegations of voting machine rigging in at least five New Jersey counties, counties which are generally Democratic. At least two dozen voters have come forward thus far reporting problems. They say that when they went to cast their vote that Menendez's name was already selected. So the Attorney General was looking into the problem this afternoon. The voter I spoke to who had problems herself said she didn't plan to file any lawsuits. And so far I'm hearing nothing to that effect from the Kane campaign, but if this race is as tight as is expected, it's certainly something which will be looked into further, I'm sure.
And when are we expected to hear results about how this might be fixed?
Well, they've been talking to the Attorney General. We're really not sure right now what's going to happen. I'm sure later tonight, especially depending on which way the vote goes, we'll hear a little bit more. Also, there was vandalism this morning at Kane headquarters in Mountainside. The front doors to the office building were barricaded, and the side doors, there was keys inserted into the locks and then broken off, making it difficult to get in. The Kane campaign is calling the incident just more corrupt and underhanded Hudson County politics, so that's something, too.
Okay, Teal Anderson, live at Tom Kane's headquarters in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Thank you very much, Teal.
Thanks so much, Carrie.
Now, we have Justin Phillips here, assistant professor of political science at Columbia University. Now, as far as the New Jersey Senate race is going, do you think that the Kane family, Tom Kane Jr., do you think he's relied too much on his family name throughout this campaign?
Well, I do think he's relied pretty heavily on his family name, but it's working. It seems to be working elsewhere in the Pennsylvania race. Bob Casey Jr. is relying on his father's name, although unlike Kane Jr., he's actually held statewide elective office, so that works to his advantage, whereas Kane has only served in the state legislature, so he doesn't have experience in Congress or running statewide elections.
So what do you think could prove to be the deciding factor in this Senate race between Kane Jr. and Menendez?
Well, I really think that the anti-Republican tide may just push Menendez across the finish line a few points ahead of Kane Jr.
And what do you think about these problems with the voting machines? They're saying that Democrats are upset about 2,000 people have come forward with problems with the voting machines. What does this mean for the Democratic vote?
Well, I think at this point the voting irregularities don't appear to be particularly widespread, which means that they won't have much of an effect on the outcome unless the election is particularly close. The effect that they will have is they may sort of undermine the result in the minds of at least some voters.
Now, New Jersey hasn't had a Republican senator since 1972. What do you think the chances are that that could change tonight?
Well, I think that it may change, but if I had to make a prediction at this point, I would say that Menendez will probably win the race. He's been ahead by a few points in the recent polling. So I think that coupled with the anti-Republican tide that may be sweeping the nation, I think that Menendez will probably emerge victorious.
Now, Ohio is another race we're covering closely. What would it mean for Democrats if they took the House and Senate there?
In the state of Ohio?
In the state of Ohio.
In the state legislature?
Yes.
Oh, well, I think that would be a pretty dramatic change for the state government of Ohio. The Republican Party has had sort of held control of state government there for a long time, and this would be it's possible. Although I think it's still unlikely because the Republican advantage in the state legislature is quite large.
And as far as the recent scandal throughout the state, to what degree do you think that will affect voters heading to the polls?
Well, if we're to believe the earlier polling results or some of the public opinion polls, it would indicate that the Republicans are going to lose the state level races and the Senate races and the Senate race and potentially a number of House races, which could help swing the House of Representatives to the Democrats.
Justin Phillips, assistant professor of political science here at Columbia University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
I'm Carrie Ederer.
And I'm David Fusaro.
Polls across the country are closing. Early results are just starting to trickle in. We have some information from Virginia, where one of the nation's most hotly contested races is taking place. Early poll numbers show that the race is still a dead heat. In Virginia, with about a third of the precincts reporting so far, George Allen has a very slight lead. Republican George Allen is leading so far in the state with 333,079 votes so far against Webb's 330,681 votes. These figures translate to 49.56% of the vote for Allen against 49.2% for Webb. So it's pretty close.
You're listening to Battleground 2006 from Columbia Radio News. I'm David Fusaro.
And I'm Carrie Ederer.
Until the final election results come in, most Americans rely on pollsters to take the pulse of the nation. I asked Kathleen Frankovic, pollster for CBS News. Polling data can take the temperature of the electorate, but it can also influence voter opinion. How does CBS balance reporting on public opinion and swaying it?
Well, remember, we're not going to make any projections until after the polls have closed in the state. We are going to talk about exit polling results in general, but as they explain the mood of the country.
What races are you watching closely today and why?
Oh, well, I think there are about 10 very important Senate races where the control of the Senate is going to be decided. And I think, you know, anybody who's been following politics knows where they are. There are some states that have sort of snuck onto that competitive list really in the last week or so. But we're looking at races where Democrats hope to win seats from the Republicans in states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Tennessee, Missouri, Montana, and Virginia. And a couple of states where the Republicans hope to make a gain.
What other reforms have been put in place since 2000 and 2004 when we saw news organizations struggle with the accuracy of exit polling and partial results?
I think that that struggle is probably too strong a word. We certainly had in 2000 two mistaken projections, and that they were due to, in part, the first in 2000 in Florida, the Gore projection in Florida, did have an exit poll component to it, but also included tabulated votes and actual votes from sample precincts. One of the new things that's happened this year is that we have, as news organizations, agreed not to receive any information from the pool until 5 p.m. In 2004, no member organization made a mistake and made a wrong projection. But certainly we discovered as we examined the data that the exit poll itself might not have been as good as we would like to see it.
We've seen in all within the space of the last week or so, several different polls from different organizations as far as the national trends of people voting Democrat versus Republican in this election. ABC News, Washington Post poll had it 51-45 in favor of the Democrats on Saturday. A poll by Gallup USA Today completed on Sunday had it almost the same, 51-44. Now, those differ greatly from a CNN poll that had a 20-point Democratic lead. Time Newsweek polls showed 15 to 16-point Democratic leads, and a CBS New York Times poll completed last week showed an 18-point Democratic lead. How do you reconcile those numbers, and what kind of information are we giving to the public with all those different sources?
And there's also a Fox poll that has a Democratic lead of 13 points that was reported yesterday. Reported on Monday. One of the things that I think we all have to recognize when we look at midterm election polls is that we're talking about a popularity contest. You're asking people not who they're voting for in their particular district by name. You're asking people if they would vote for the Democratic candidate or the Republican candidate.
We saw the religious right have a strong influence on the 2004 election. Are there any groups that you think will have a strong effect on this election? And what changes do you anticipate in the American voter landscape going forward from this election?
We always look at evangelical voters. They're an important part of the Republican base, and the question is not just how strong they vote Republican, but also how large a component of the electorate they are. It'll be interesting to see what happens tonight.
That was Dr. Kathy Frankovic, Director of Surveys for CBS News.
The Democratic control of the Senate depends on a few key races. Virginia is a traditional Republican stronghold, but its incumbent Republican Senator George Allen is struggling against a strong challenge from anti-war Democrat Jim Webb. Today's outcome there could hinge on sentiments about the Iraq War. But even more important, say Virginia political analysts, are the state's changing demographics. Bilal Qureshi of Columbia Radio News reports.
Last night, Republican George Allen held his final rally among his conservative base in Richmond, Virginia, the usually Republican-leaning state capital. Allen's closing speech was laced with references to traditional conservative values.
And we need lower taxes and more jobs rather than higher taxes and more dictates from Washington, D.C.
Lower taxes and small government are popular themes in Richmond, but 100 miles to the north, in Alexandria, Virginia, where Allen's opponent Jim Webb held his final campaign event last night, voters look increasingly to government to solve the problems arising from the district's overcrowding.
I mean, it sounds kind of trivial because you think you can find solutions to that, but Northern Virginia is becoming kind of unmanageable.
Bill Quant, who fights Northern Virginia's congested roads on his frequent commute into Washington, says that the most important political issue in cities like Alexandria is transportation.
And an awful lot of people are just really annoyed that in their everyday life they are finding they're spending an hour, hour and a half on the roads, and it's ridiculous.
Alexandria is one of the booming Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., home to some of the state's most educated, affluent residents. These Northern Virginia suburbs are more racially and politically diverse than the traditional rural Virginia counties to their south. Richmond Times-Dispatch reporter Robert Shapiro explains.
Northern Virginia has grown exponentially and has had a massive effect on the state's direction. However, downstate Virginia tends to be more moderate, if not more conservative. And the friction is not unlike the friction, say, between the New York metropolitan area and upstate.
This is especially evident in the debate over a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage that appeared on the Virginia ballot today. According to a poll taken by the Washington Post 3 weeks ago, residents of Northern Virginia opposed the ban by a 13-point margin. The rest of the state supported the amendment by over 20 points. That's a concern for traditional conservative voters like Reverend William Carter of Richmond.
That makes me a little nervous. There seems to be a transition in the state of Virginia to more liberal values. And so, you know, I know we're going to have to fight in this election. You know, we're going to have to fight to win it.
Both incumbent Allen and his challenger Webb have focused their campaign strategy on Northern Virginia, which accounts for one-third of today's votes. And the result tonight will reveal the full impact of the changing demographics of the district on Virginia politics. Although Webb and Allen both voted in their local counties, they are awaiting results with their respective bases. Webb is in suburban Washington, and Allen is in downtown Richmond. Bilal Qureshi, Columbia Radio News.
One of the most closely watched Senate races tonight is in the state of Virginia, where the Republican incumbent George Allen and the Democrat James Webb, a former Secretary of the Navy, are locked in what at this hour is a very close contest. With a little more than half the precincts counted, Allen has a 33,000 vote lead over Webb. Columbia Radio News' Dane Liu is at Webb headquarters in Northern Virginia. Hello, Dane.
Hi.
Very close race right now. Do you think Allen's going to be able to hold on to his slim lead?
Well, we don't know just yet. The polls just closed at 7 o'clock, and according to the State Board of Elections, with more than half the precincts reported, Allen is leading by less than 2%. But it's still very early in the night for this tight race, and so we're going to be, you know, spending a lot of time here. Dave?
Do you have any ideas as to where the many of the precincts that have been counted are? Are they in Northern Virginia, which is traditionally a Democratic stronghold, or is, with the precincts that are counted later in the night, who looks to be picking up more votes? Who has more of their strongholds coming in?
Well, so far, according to Webb's spokeswoman, the precincts that have been reported for are in the South. The South, where the southern states were counted first, the southern part of the state, and later, as we continue throughout the night, we're counting the northern votes. And as you know, Northern Virginia is a stronghold for Webb.
Now, you've covered this race, and it's been a very tight battle. Talk a little bit about the distinguishing characteristics between each candidate.
Well, it's hard to talk about the distinguishing characteristics between the two candidates because it has been a very intense race full of mudslinging and other distractions that take voters away from the candidate's stance on issues. But to clarify, Webb has had three consistent themes throughout his campaign. He has been focusing on redirecting foreign policy toward diplomacy, such as ending the Iraq War, economic fairness, such as through higher minimum wage, and limiting the president's abuse of power. But more attention was given to scandals, which have been plaguing the election. They have equally distracted voters from Allen's message of tax cuts, need for energy independence, border control, and opposition to same-sex marriage. But his tone about the war has changed over time. And in the last month especially, Allen has shown growing doubts about the Iraq War and has been distancing himself from Bush.
Are the people at the Webb headquarters worried about the gay marriage vote that's up in Virginia tonight, that perhaps the New Jersey court case of several weeks ago might affect that race down there?
Right. Well, they... A marriage amendment is a very complex issue, actually, for the Webb campaign, because they have been trying to tell their voters that by voting, their position is that by voting for the gay marriage amendment, you're actually not only, this amendment would not only apply to gay couples, but heterosexual couples as well, and affect their benefits as couples in this state. And so I'm not sure how clearly this message has gotten across. Webb has made a significant effort to push his position that he is a Christian and he believes in God. He does not support gay marriage, but he also does not support this amendment, which would ban gay marriage from the state and make that part of the Constitution. That's what we need to clarify here, which is in the state of Virginia, gay marriage was banned, has always been banned. It's been banned since 2004. And so this amendment would not change anything except making this a part of the Constitution rather than just a state law alone, so that judges cannot arbitrarily, at their own whim, like in the case of New Jersey, change a state law. And that's what the proponents of this amendment has been trying to do.
Thank you very much, Dane.
Thank you, Dave. Good luck. Have a good night.
You too. Our reporter Dane Liu at Webb headquarters in Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
Let's turn again to Justin Phillips, a political science professor at Columbia University. He's been one of our in-house election experts. Now, as far as the Virginia Senate race, what could it mean if Republicans lose the Senate race in Virginia tonight?
Well, I think this would be a very significant and unexpected loss for the Republican Party. The conventional wisdom going into today was that in order to capture control of the Senate, the Democrats needed to win two of three southern Senate races or states that bordered the South, that being Tennessee, Missouri, and Virginia. And so if they win Virginia, that would be one of those two and would push the Democrats closer to having a majority in the Senate. I also think it would be particularly significant for George Allen, who several months ago had presidential ambitions. And certainly if he were to lose tonight, it would probably mean an end to his presidential campaign for 2008.
And do you think, since the majority of the Northern Virginian votes haven't been counted yet, do you think this is good, is a good thing for Democrats?
Certainly, it's good news for Jim Webb. The conservative votes tend to dominate the southern part of the state, and obviously, as your piece said, the northern areas of the states, the D.C. suburb, are much more likely to have voted for Jim Webb. And so, as those votes come in and are counted, we should expect to see Webb probably tighten the race, and then maybe to actually take a lead.
That's Justin Phillips, a political science professor at Columbia University. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
You're listening to Battleground 2006, live coverage of the midterm elections from the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Our production staff includes Stephanie Barber, Erica Berenstein, Shartia Brantley, Rachel Kund, Marie Forestier, Yasmina Hatem, Akisa Omalefu, and Elisha Sulai.
Andrea DeMarco is our senior producer. The executive producer of Battleground 2006 from Columbia Radio News is David Gura.
Polls in New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Maryland are about to close. We'll have updates from our field reporters there, and we'll hear from more analysts in our next hour of live election night coverage. I'm David Fusaro.
And I'm Carrie Ederer.